Hello there, and you are very welcome to episode 4 of League of Ireland Lives with myself, Jamie Moore. Thank you very much for joining me. Now, coming up over the next hour and 10 minutes or so, we've got two fascinating interviews. Firstly, we're going to hear from Patrick Cuban, the Dundalk striker, of course, and he's trying to keep busy at home, has built a home gym, and is playing lots of board games, as well as going out for his runs and being addicted to Netflix. But he's going to bring us inside the Dundalk camp when the manager Stephen Kenny left after the FAI Cup final around Christmas time in 2018 to become the Ireland under-21 manager. Now, of course, over the last week, confirmed as the Ireland senior manager, and Huben thinks he'll do a great job as the manager of the boys in green.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, because we didn't know what was going on at the time. Obviously, we knew Stephen was gone. It was heartbreaking after having the year I had with him. And how well I've always played underneath Steve, and he always got the best out of me, and he was a very good manager, and he was phenomenal in what he was doing at the club, and it was heartbreaking, but you know, it was up to all of us really to roll up our sleeves and kick on. And
so that chat with Patrick Cuban is coming up in just a second, and then we'll be joined by the Drogheda United manager Tim Clancy for around a 35-minute interview. Tim, of course, played for Belvedere after being with Trim Celtic, joined Millwall and spent time in Scotland with Kilmarnock, Motherwell, Hibs and St Johnstone. He also played for Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers and Bray Wanderers, and he is now the manager of Drogheda, took over in December 2017. Young manager, only 35, and he'll give us a really interesting insight into life as a young League of Ireland manager with big ambitions.
What I've noticed as well playing under certain managers is when the manager is the manager, he's the coach, he's organising training, he's taking shooting, he's doing this, that and the other. I think it's too much, it's the same voice all the time, and I think get mundane and players can sort of get fed up with it. So I sort of was, from the start, I wanted to be a manager that when I came in and spoke and I wanted the players to be engaged, I didn't want them to be disinterested because it's constantly my voice all the time. And that's why I was lucky enough to get Kev in.
As well, if you missed the Stephen Kenny press conference, 35 minutes or so in which I've kind of linked in between each of his answers, that is on the League of Ireland Live's SoundCloud. It's also on the Anchor podcast app, and it's also on Spotify and now on Apple Podcast too, so you can listen back to that in full. But for this episode, let's get going now with Patrick Cuban and then Tim Clancy. So you're on League of Ireland Live's, and I'm very happy to welcome the Dock striker Patrick Cuban. Pat, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you getting on?
I'm very good, thanks. Pat has used some board games to prop his iPad up so we can see him. So I guess you've been using them in isolation to try and keep yourself somewhat occupied along with your exercise and stuff.
Yeah, I have a bit of, 30 seconds, Scrabble, what's this, Rummy Cup, stuff like that. Trying to keep the mind occupied as much as possible, which is important.
If my little brother listens, he is a Rummy Cub addict. We play it every Christmas, so it's a great game. And I suppose at this time, everyone is just trying to do whatever they can to keep themselves occupied. And
to be fair, I've been getting battered by the missus with it. My attention span isn't the best when I'm coming to play with it. I get tired in the middle of the game, but yeah, it's not bad. She's battered me though, to be honest.
Yeah, because I know you boys in Dundalk like to play the odd card game or some board games on your European trip. So that experience hasn't helped you beat your missus.
No, not at all. We used to, obviously, before Robbie Benson left, he used to be the games master, and he'd have, you know, loads of games. He had Hitler, which was a great game. There's loads. He had plenty of games to keep us occupied in the away trips. So yeah, but no, this kind of game is not helping me at all.
So what have you been doing apart from your runs and your home workouts to try and keep the brain active and not go crazy?
Just trying to stay active as possible. Doing my running in the morning. Trying to keep into the same routine, which is very difficult. I get my running done or my little gym. I have a gym area there in the corner of my house.
Oh, very nice. Lovely, yeah. Very nice, very nice.
So I do as much as I can, stay active, go for walks and stuff like that. Sorry.
All right, no problem.
Go for walks, stuff like that with the dog. I've been battering Netflix. I've nearly watched everything, every TV series you can name. I've definitely watched it. So, it's been all good so far, I suppose, in with the circumstances. I've been handling it quite well, to be honest.
What's on Netflix?
So, The English Game. Very good. I thought it was very good. Ozark. I've watched Money Heist. So, there were the three main ones I've watched. So I'm going to try and watch The Sopranos now because I've never seen it before. So that's the next one on the list.
Very nice. Yeah, I started Money Heist myself. I'm just towards the end of the first series, so don't ruin anything for me. It's really good so far.
Probably one of the best I've watched now in a long, long time. So it's right up there for sure.
And in terms of trying to keep fit, I know you're on a Zoom call earlier on. We're chatting on Saturday afternoon with Vinnie Pert, the manager, and all the other players. So the club have been trying to keep you guys as fit as possible because you don't know yet when you're going to return to training. And it's, I suppose everybody's been given individual responsibility to try and do their own stuff. But the use of technology has certainly helped.
Yeah, definitely. We use an app called TrueCoach. We've used it last year. So basically our fitness coach, Graham Norton, he's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes for us and to make sure he's getting, you know, workouts for us, and he's been putting a lot in place. And even the home gym workouts, you know, he's wide variety of, you know, different exercises to do at home and still keep the muscles strong, I suppose, it's been very good so far. And but the runs haven't been the best, to be honest with you. It's very difficult to be doing the runs by yourself, but you know, you have to stay fit, you have to do them, and there's no hiding place anyway for us at the moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's not something anybody thought they would have to do. So how have you found it all and having to train on your own and having to, like you saw behind you, try and put together some sort of gym equipment to build your own home gym and be out in the park or on the road, literally running on your own?
Yeah, to be honest, it is difficult, but it's definitely doable. You know, it's important that, you know, every player really has to stay fit at this moment of time. I know it's difficult times and all that, but there's no excuses either. I think it's massively important that, you know, you keep on top of things, and we're definitely doing it here. And, you know, I'd like to think everyone else is doing it too. It is difficult, but, you know, I'm managing quite well. Find a grass area somewhere, which is kind of hard to do, but I found one area which is, you know, has been not many people there, so my distancing is being quite good at the moment. But yeah, the runs have been difficult. We downloaded an app as well to measure our distances and stuff like that in our runs, and so there's definitely no hiding place. So the fitness coach is on top of everything at the moment, which is good. You know, it's only for our own benefit to make sure we come back stronger whenever that may be.
Yeah, and we're speaking on the 11th of April, so that June 19th date is still over 2 months away. As a League of Ireland player, are you yourself confident that you will be back playing matches then?
Yeah, you know, you have to be. You have to, you know, you have to follow all the guidelines, what the government has put, you know, in front of us. And, you know, with everything that's going on with the league and stuff like that, you know, you just have to follow what they're saying. And so you have to prepare yourself as much as possible for the outcome. And I think what we have in place anyway at the moment, and all the lads working hard and sending their stuff in and stuff like that, you know, we're doing our best to stay on the right path, which is, you know, 2 months away now, I suppose. And hopefully, you know, there's some games to show for it at the end of it.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I wanted to speak to you was I saw yesterday on Instagram that Dundalk set up a GoFundMe page to try and help some local nursing homes, and you delivered some PPE equipment to them yesterday. You might just explain what happened, and the club, as with every club, are trying to do their best in their own local community to try and help.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the club are just trying to help out the community like they always do, which is massively important, especially in these times. So, you know, some of the nursing homes needed some, you know, some equipment and stuff like that. So the club, you know, they've done the GoFundMe page and stuff like that. And to be fair to everyone, they've chipped in very well. And it was actually a pleasure to go around to each nursing home to see, you know, obviously from the outside, to see like what they're kind of going through and how difficult it is for them. And, you know, they're, you know, I know it's the old cliche now, but they are the real heroes at the moment. You know, the stuff that they're going through day in, day out, it's, you know, helping our country. And, you know, whatever we can give to help it's massively important. And they're doing a fantastic job.
And I'm sure you weren't able to go into the nursing homes themselves, but even for some of the residents who may be football fans, maybe Dundalk fans, to look out the window or give you a wave or know that Dundalk striker Patrick Hoopman was there to deliver some stuff, I'm sure was a nice boost for them.
Yeah, and to be honest, it was a nice boost for me too, going around seeing, you know, the work that they're doing, and you know, with the tough times that are here, that they're, you know, they're upbeat and they're there were smiles, load of smiles on their faces and stuff like that. So it was great to go around to each one, and they're doing a fantastic job, and it's just great to see. So it was a massive boost for me to see something like that also.
So, Patrick, the podcast here is called League of Ireland Lives, and the fact that we're on a pause at the moment, it felt like a good time to speak to some footballers about their life in the League of Ireland. And yours started with Mareview United. You had a couple of spells there, split with a short spell in England before joining Dundalk in 2013. Then you went back to England for a few years and then came back in 2018. So bring me back to your first League of Ireland memory. What comes to mind?
Johnny Glynn, basically, he was the manager. He's the one, kind of put me underneath his wing, and I think I was 16 at the time, and he was kind of nurturing me into, the footballer I am now, I suppose. He was very good to me, and the memories were brilliant. We started in the A League, which was below the first division, and we won that. I didn't play too many games in it, but I came on in, I think it was the final against Kildare, for a couple of minutes. But then the season after, I made a few appearances. Still didn't know what my position was. I was playing as a defensive midfielder, I was playing the 10. I was playing out wide, the odd time up top. I was kind of in a load of different positions as well. So, the memories are fantastic with Mareview. We caused a lot of upsets along the way. And, we were an amateur club, we actually, held our own for good periods of each game, and which was quite enjoyable. It was massively important as well to my development. Getting to play at a level like that at your age is really important for your development, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
So you went off for a short spell in the UK, and then you came back to Mareview again, to your local club, played lots of games then when you were a couple of years older. And then Stephen Kenny rings and you sign for Dundalk. Bring me to that moment when, I suppose the phone rings and he's trying to build the Dundalk team that he did build, and now Vinnie Pert has taken on. But at that stage, he was trying to sign, people like you from the first division, maybe lads who weren't overly well known, and he decided to give you a call.
Well, it was a funny one for me. So I had a half decent year from Mareview. That's when I established the number nine role. As a striker, I scored, I think it was 14 goals that year. In competitions, 14 or 15, I'm not fully sure. And from what I heard, Stephen was at our game against Salt Hill. It was like last game of the season. It was 0-0. It was, it was a bad day. It was wind, rain, you name it. We were down to 10 men after 20 minutes. And to be honest, I didn't think I played that great, to be honest. And to hear that he was at the game, and that's kind of what he picked me from, was a bit funny. But he obviously seen something, and then remember he made the phone call. I had a couple of clubs actually interested me. I'd Longford that were interested in me that year. I had Limerick. I was very close to signing for Limerick, but Pat Scully, he was the manager at the time. He actually parted away with the club, and so that didn't flourish that year. And to be honest, I would have probably signed for Limerick if that was going ahead, because it was closer to home at the time. And to be honest, I didn't really know too much about Stephen at the time either. And when I got the phone call, I was researching everything online and doing much as I could to see what he was like as a manager. And then I started to hear great things about him, and it was just a no-brainer to sign for him.
And in that season, St. Pat's won the league. You guys had a really good season, though. And I suppose that was your first experience of full-time football. I think it's possible Dundalk may have been training afternoons at that time. But when you signed for Mareview and you had that season where you're competing with Pat's for the league and stuff, how did you find all of that and your first real experience of a proper, league title race in the Premier?
I started off very poor. I done well in pre-season. But then as we got to the games, I think we had Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers and Shelburne first three games, and I struggled, to be honest, with the pace of the game. I wasn't used to it at all, and I was getting cramps early on, very early, you're talking 55, 60 minutes, and that was just me not used to the pace of the game. And then Stephen dropped me for, I think it was 7 games in a row. I was making the odd appearance here and there, and I was getting kind of frustrated a small bit, but I was still working hard behind the scenes. And I came on against Cork, and that's when I scored my first goal. And that year, I didn't look back. I went on a great run of scoring goals, and I was used to the pace of the game, and I was getting better and better. And we're very close that year to actually, we could have won the league that year if we beat Pats in Inchicore. But it wasn't to be. The beat was 2-0, and with that, it was a great credit to all of us that year, to come from basically nothing to finishing second, and then obviously winning the league the year after. It was a phenomenal year.
And of course, at that time, the battle between Dundalk and Cork City was really starting. And the year you won the league in 14, it was only by 2 points. It went very close. I think that was the year when there was a big game in Oriel Park between Dundalk and Cork towards the end to actually win the league. And, for previous years, you had Pats and Sligo and Shamrock Rovers and Bowes and others. And it was two new teams going for it. What do you remember about those battles and that specific game at the end of that season to actually win the league?
From what I remember, we played them the previous three times we played them. We beat them three times. So, we were very comfortable and we were confident going into the game, but obviously they only needed a draw, which there was a lot of pressure on our hands. I always say if we didn't win the league that year, it would have been catastrophe really, because I think we were like 7 or 6 points ahead with like 6 games to go or something like that, and we drew a couple of games and we let them back in it, and they were scoring last minute winners and stuff like that. And the pressure did get to us, you have to say, in the last couple of games. And I just remember on the night how calm everyone was in the dressing room before the game. And then half time we came in and we were disappointed and, things weren't going our way. And, there was a bit of, people giving out and stuff like that. And I just remember Stephen Kenny coming in and how calm he was, saying that we're going to win the game and basically relaxing everyone, and everyone just went out like they were 3-0 up in the second half. That's how it felt, and we went on to win the game and, to be honest, deservedly so, win the league that year. And it was just, the memories were just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I know shortly after that you went to the UK and then you came back in 2018, and at that stage Cork and the Dock were still really competing towards the top. I know last season Cork fell off a little bit, but those Cork Dundalk games, the rivalry, being involved in it at the start, watching it when you were in the UK and then coming back to it again, like, was a really great time for people to watch the league, and I'm sure for you guys to be involved in that battle.
Yeah, I remember watching basically nearly every game Cork and Dundalk played. I was in Oriel Park when Cork beat them 3-0. Seanan McGuire got a hat-trick that day, and it was actually a poor game from both sides that day. But, Dundalk ended up losing 3-0. And then I remember watching the FAI Cup final when Dundalk lost. And I had a good feeling I was coming home then. And I said to myself, I want to come back and I want to, make things right, and I want to challenge Cork and hopefully be a difference in games and stuff like that. And I like to think I did that when I came home. The rivalry was fierce, especially my first year back from the UK. It was fierce. Every game was like cup final. They were always tight. There was definitely a bit of a nibble between the two sides. There's no doubt about that. But it created a good atmosphere and a great advert for the league, I thought. And, we won the league that year quite comfortably. And, but the rivalry was definitely right up there.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about your time in the UK, Pat, but mainly with the League of Ireland, because this is a League of Ireland podcast. But you signed for Oxford in 2014, loaned at Stevenage and Grimsby, and then a spell at Mansfield too. How would you reflect on your time in the UK, because I know something that you really wanted to do was to go over there and do really well, and you got that chance after that cup final in 2014.
Yeah, lot of ups and downs. There was a lot of downs, to be honest. When I signed for Oxford, my first training, I was just after finishing the whole season, and I trained, and I probably could have done with a longer break, to be honest with you, after finishing the season. But I couldn't play until January anyway. But they wanted me to train, so obviously I'm going to train. And I done my ankle. I was out for 3 months with it straight away, and I worked extremely hard to get back as fit as I could. And I kind of got thrown into the deep end, as you could say, because Oxford weren't doing that well at the moment, but they were a club that were striving to do bigger things the year after. And, you know, first 9-10 games, I was basically thrown in, starting every game, but it was difficult. I wasn't match fit, didn't feel fit at all, wasn't sharp, and just took me a good while to score a goal and to get any kind of confidence going. And then my general play was okay, and but I think the damage was done for me at Oxford at that first half season, because they ended up signing Kamar Roof and Ryan Taylor, and so I had to work twice as hard for the following year. And you know, I got in the team there, you know, the odd time, and you know, I scored, you know, 6 goals in that season with them in the first half of the season with the little time I actually had. I can't really remember the stats or the minutes, but it was quite good. And but they wanted me to go out on loan, and which was unfortunate, because they ended up having a great year, getting promoted that year. And then with going to Stevenage, you know, it was, you know, trying to freshen up things probably and trying to get going again. And well, that didn't work out either. So it sounds like all doom and gloom, but you know, Teddy Sheringham signed me as the manager. He was sacked that evening after me signing for a loan move for a month. But it didn't really change anything. They still wanted me to play and stuff. So first game in, and I done my ankle again. I was out for a month. So that was my loan finished. And then I had no choice but to go on loan to the conference, because all the other transfer windows for the league teams was closed, so I had to go to the conference. So I went to Grimsby, and that was a great, to be honest, that I enjoyed Grimsby. It was difficult living there, because I was staying in a hotel I was in a hotel for about 5 months. That was a difficulty, not cooking my own food and stuff like that, and having my own real space. But we got promoted that year. I done reasonably okay general play wise, but not finishing wise. Like, just wasn't getting in positions to score goals, and that's just the way it was. Really enjoyed my time at Mansfield, loved it. Adam Murray was brilliant with me. He had every bit of faith in me. He gave me my chance when the time was right, and I thought I took it. But then unfortunately got the sack. Steve Evans came in, and first couple of games, Steve Evans, I was doing really well. I had 2 goals in 3 games for him or something like that. And then he brought in his own players in January, and I was kind of shafted to the stand, and which wasn't easy to take. And obviously I wanted to go on loan again. He wouldn't let me. I played in the Checker Trade Cup against Oldham, scored twice. Still wasn't getting any game time. So it was kind of just, to be honest, it was another season kind of rode off for me, and I just said, you know what, it's time for me to come home, because it's just not working. And that bit of luck, I just wasn't getting it. And, you know, the club got me right, Dundalk got me right in terms of fitness, in terms of my injuries. And, you know, I haven't been injured since, touch wood, since I've come back to Dundalk. And, you know, I strived with that massively.
Yeah, I suppose watching Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix just gives you an insight into, you know, how clubs work and managers and coaches and chairmen, and that there's lots more going on behind the scenes might impact players and stuff, which I'm sure is something that you experienced. But you summed that up really well, Pat. Were Dundalk the only club you wanted to come home to, you were going to come home to? Was there other interest, and were you happy to link up with Stephen Kenny and the lads again? I'm sure you were.
So what happened was I was without a club, and I think it was in July, and I had a couple of offers to stay in the UK and actually go to stay in the League Two, but I wasn't fully sure if I wanted to do that all over again. But I was doing my own training, and I ended up doing my medial meniscus. It's called a buckle handle tear medial meniscus on my right knee by myself, which was a totally disaster. Basically, no club would touch me then. And I had to go through the PFA over there for them to cover my costs in terms of surgery and then the rehab, and which was really difficult. I had to I had to do rehab on my own because I lost down the 2 weeks that you go. They pay for like 2 weeks of rehab, and I lost down that because they've something with the insurance. They won't cover it anymore, and so that was really extremely difficult. And I just said, you know what, just come home. And I was lucky enough for Stephen to actually bring me home and find me. And then I was with Danny Miller for that whole off season, and he just got me right. He was unbelievable with me, and you know, basically the story says itself. I scored 32 goals that year, and it was a phenomenal year for me to come back from where I was. And but you know what, the main thing was I just never give up. That's massively important. You see young lads coming home a lot from the UK, and they get downhearted and downbeat, and they lose a lot of confidence and motivation, and they're mentally they're getting weakened from the UK. And as long as they stay at it, it's really important. If you stay at it, you can, you know, get to where you want to be, and not to give up. And I think that's massively important.
Yeah. So league in 2018, FAI Cup in 2018 as well. In your first season back, you've since become the Dundalk record goal scorer as well. But at the end of that season, the manager leaves and he goes to the FAI and he goes to the 21s, and he's now ultimately the senior manager. What do you remember about that time, and having had such a good first season back with the manager who signed you back? He's then left the club.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, because we didn't know what was going on at the time. Obviously, we knew Stephen was gone. It was heartbreaking after having the year I had with him, and how well I've always played underneath Stephen. He always got the best out of me, and he was very good manager, and he was phenomenal in what he was doing at the club. And it was heartbreaking, but you know, it was up to all of us really to roll up our sleeves and kick on and make sure that, you know, we retained the league at least. And and Vinny took over, and I think Vinny done really, really well in his first season. You know, we could have made history by winning 5 trophies in that year, and we're lucky not to win a penalty shootout. That's just the way things go. And You know, Stephen's doing, you know, his thing now. He's obviously the Republic of Ireland manager now, and I'm well deserved as well, by the way. And you know, we've come up leaps and bounds too. And I think we started the season quite well this year, and we were raring to go. And obviously, what happened has happened. You can't stop that, and we're at a halt now. But you know, we are in a really good place, and you know, and that's due to all the staff, Vinny, and all the players.
For you, Pat, as an attacking player, and the likes of, you know, your McElhennys and your Michael Duffys and your Robbie Bentons, so on, Jamie McGrath, etc. I spoke to him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Stephen Kenny, for you, giving you the confidence to go and express yourself and try things. And I attended his virtual press conference the other day, and one line was, "I want every schoolboy team in the country to watch my Ireland senior team and want to play like us." And when you were with him in Dundalk, the team played some brilliant, exciting, attacking football. And one line from Jamie McGrath last week was, Stephen Kenny kept saying to him at halftime, "Stop playing it backwards." And I'm sure for you, he just kept saying, "Get in the box, do your stuff, get me some goals." And he let you do that. He let you, you know, he gave you the license to go and you know, be his number 9.
Yeah, just to express yourself and go and do, you know, what you're good at. And, you know, he will give you a kick up the arse as well too. There's no doubt about that. But which every manager does that. But for me, I get quite frustrated with myself and stuff like that. And, you know, having Stephen put, you know, his arm around your shoulder and saying, you know, forget about that. Forget about, you know, just keep going, keep expressing yourself, keep trying to score goals, keep doing the work, hard work for the team. And, you know, Stephen, he has that kind of knack of, or skill, you could say, of just getting the best out of players, and he's definitely done that with me and with a lot of players, and I think it'll be the same for Ireland, to be honest.
Yeah, on that, and having listened to his press conference the other day, like, I think he will definitely have the team playing the way he wants them to play. The 21s, I'm sure you've seen him, have just been brilliant. Like, do you think he will definitely be the same in terms of style and stuff with the Ireland senior team as he was with you guys and with the 21s?
Well, I don't see why not. as you can see what he done with us, and then he's brought us straight to the under-21s, and you can see the success they were getting, even in that Toulon tournament. They got beat by Brazil 2-0, but they played some very good stuff as well. And I think the key thing is he doesn't really fear any team, as long as he gets the best out of his own players and gets them to express themselves. But at the end of the day, you need to win football matches, and he gets that too, and playing the right way, in my opinion. And he does that by getting the best out of each player he has, and his man management skills, and the way he wants his team set up. And I'm sure as a neutral, it's a good watch for you to see a team playing the right way. And you're definitely gonna, I can't see anything else but Stephen doing that with the senior team, getting the right style of football there.
Yeah, and of course there's been lots of debate recently about the type of players that he might select, and the lads who are in the current squad, some of his 21s, and particularly in the striking department, Aaron Connolly, you know, Troy Parrott, Adam Eda, etc. He knows you can score goals, Pat, too. You're 28. You've got lots ahead of you. I'm sure you'll be hopeful if you can whack a few in that he might certainly be thinking about you.
Asher, you never know. It's important that, you know, I just keep working hard. I know it's one of those things that every player will say, but it is important that I keep working hard, as twice as hard as ever, and hopefully score goals and keep scoring goals. But scoring goals in Europe as well would be a massive plus on my side. So, you know, there's a lot of targets that I want to hit this year, and hopefully I get very close to them, and, you know, see where that takes me. You know, Stephen always believed in what I've done when I was playing for Dundalk. I know international football is a different level, but I held my own in Europe before. But here, look, he's a lot to choose from. So I just have to keep doing my job, and you never know in the future. You never know what happens. So just keep doing what I'm doing, and hopefully, fingers crossed, you never know.
Yeah, and scoring goals as well, Pat. A few different celebrations over the years. Do you put much thought into them? And there was one, I can't remember what, a few games where maybe you were getting a bit of stick in the press. I don't know, we're all fans, and you were very eager to let everyone know who you were with the back of the jersey or whatever when you were scoring.
Sligo,
yes, okay.
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah, I was kind of, not going to lie, I was pissed off. Straight up, I'm going to tell you. I was pissed off, a lot of negative comments towards me, and you know, I was the captain of Dundalk as well when Gartz wasn't playing, and I was getting stick from even my own fans as well, and it wasn't nice, especially the year I just had. But to be honest, that's forgotten about, and I know that. And I was actually doing quite well against Sligo, that was the thing, and I was getting stick from the Sligo fans. They were saying, you can't really say it on this, but you get it all the time. So I dinked the penalty down the middle to make it 1-1. And I just gave them a little reminder who I was. Just kind of something that just happens. You don't really think about it like the day before or the week before. It's just something that happens at that, you know, spur of the moment. You know, you kind of, I won't say lose your head, but just something comes in and you just do it. And that's just that. Ended up losing that game, so it kind of bit me in the arse, didn't it?
yeah. Honest,
that's happened a few times to me. So I think I need to refrain from doing any of those ones anymore, because that's happened to me 3 times now in what, 4 years. So I need to stop doing that celebration.
Tell me what it feels like to score a big League of Ireland goal for you. Like, you've scored so many of them. You're Dundalk's top scorer, European games, big cup games, big league games and stuff. What's the feeling like to actually score a big goal in those type games?
To be honest, every goal I score, there's no better feeling. You're just on cloud nine when you score. It just gives you that bit extra confidence to do other stuff in the game and to play that. You know, it just gives you, it's like an adrenaline level to spur you on to, you know, try and do more and score more and run more, and it just gives you that. It's just I can't describe the feeling. It is phenomenal. Obviously, scoring against Rovers and stuff like that, there's a bit more edge maybe to the game and stuff like that. But honestly, it feels the same. I just love scoring goals, and it's something I love to do, and I don't want to stop now either. So hopefully, there's plenty more in the bag in the next couple of years.
Lastly, Pat, away from football, and I know we've spoken about the virus and being at home now and the board games and Netflix and stuff, but in general, what do you get up to away from being a football player? And when you do finish in 5, 6, 7 years' time, what do you hope to be maybe up to from that sense?
Well, I've trying to plan in place. Obviously, it's all stuck to, it's all put to a bit of a halt now, but try and get my coaching badges done to see if that's the route I want to take. I already have stuff in line in terms of I might set up my own business in terms of football business in like youth coaching back in my hometown, maybe in Galway or maybe up here. I'm not fully sure yet. So yeah, I have a few things in mind that I want to do. I definitely want to stay in the game. I love the game too much to leave the game, to be honest with you. And so hopefully just get the required requirements in terms of the coaching badges. That's definitely my main aim, is to get that in the next couple of years and then see where that takes me, because I can see myself, you know, playing a part in the game, and hopefully, with fingers crossed, I can do it.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say become a football agent there, and your agent Liam Carroll from First Rate Players gave me an awful stick when I had Jamie McGraw on about the move to Scotland, not giving him a shout out and mentioning him. So I better mention him here, because otherwise I'll be in big trouble with him.
He's doing a phenomenal job as well. No, I don't know. I don't know if I can handle all the phone calls, to be honest with you. So, but yeah, maybe. You never know. You never know in football whatever path to go on. But I definitely want to stay in the game and do the coaching badges and see where it takes me. You know, people, you know, my close friends always said to me I'd be a very good PT, but to be honest, I don't think I want to do that. I think I want to, you know, stay in the game. I love the environment. I just love the game. I love everything about it. So get the required requirements. That's the main thing for me at the moment.
And for now, when you get back playing, is it score more goals for the next few years and keep the career flying? So, Pat, thanks for your time. Enjoy the rest of your lockdown, and we'll see you soon. Cheers. Thanks a million.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
So very happy to welcome the Drogheda manager, Tim Clancy, to League of Ireland Live. Tim, how are you?
Not bad, Jamie. As good as can be in these circumstances.
Yeah, we're chatting on Sunday, late morning, early afternoon, and we were both enjoying the sunshine yesterday, so nice in lockdown to at least have some nice weather to be in for a while.
Yeah, listen, obviously, for ones that have gardens and able to put the kids outside and whatnot, it's good when the weather's sunny. You've got to feel for ones that are in apartments or in flats that don't get an opportunity to have outside space. So I'm quite happy enough that we've got a little bit of a garden there that the kids can play in.
How have you found it yourself? And I'm sure as a League of Ireland manager, even though you don't have your players at the moment, you're still doing your best to try and somewhat keep them fit.
Yeah, listen, you're wanting to keep the players fit, but we're nearly 10 weeks out from the penciled in date of getting back in the 19th of June, so you wouldn't be doing too much 10 weeks out from the start of the season. There's a balancing act. You obviously sent out an initial programme and it was locked down for 2 weeks, and then the severity of the situation sort of kicked in and it got extended to the 19th of June, so you have to tailor that now, and I don't really want my players doing too much now and absolutely battering it at this stage when there's still another 9.5 weeks to go till we're back in.
Yeah, and of course, your club became the first club to officially announce that they weren't going to be able to pay the players for this period, but that the players and staff would still get the same amount over the season, but that it would have to be paid in the last 6 or 8 weeks when the extra games are on, and that's something that you've had to try and deal with as the manager as well.
Yeah, I think it was a logical thing to do. We could have stumbled on and kept on paying the players in on a week-to-week basis or every second week as we get paid. But you would have come on to a stage then where with no money coming in, and then the club would have been in a poor position. And we didn't want to do that. Obviously, the chairman put a message into the WhatsApp group, the letter I think that was made public anyway. And I thought it was probably as good as a letter or correspondence you're going to get from a chairman to players. And it was fairly clear, and I think all the players realised that as well, and speaking to a lot of the players as well, they understood the situation the club's in, and everyone's going to be backdated to what they're due, and if the season gets going again and we fulfil all the fixtures, that is. So I think it's the logical thing to do, and I think every club in the country has made some adjustments in some sorts.
And are you confident, Tim, that things will start back on the 19th of June, or do you think it might be a bit later?
I don't know, Jamie. I don't know. We'll take... we'll take all the guidelines and the stuff from the FEI, and I'm sure they're listening to the government, and we'll follow their procedures. And listen, it is what it is. It's football sort of down the list of priorities at the minute. So I know it's what we all want to do, and it's also a job for a lot of us, and it's our livelihood. But there's people dying left, right, and centre, and I think that's more important than us getting back in playing the games on a Friday night.
Yeah, very well said. And we're trying, Tim, to talk to, you know, people with interest in League of Ireland careers. And, of course, your career before that took you across a number of clubs in Scotland. You started at Millwall all the way back in 2003. And you spent 7 years in Scotland with Kilmarnock, Motherwell, Hibs and St Johnston before coming back to sign for Shamrock Rovers. How would you look back on your career in the UK and Scotland?
Yeah, I went over 2002, actually, to Millwall as a kid, straight after doing the Leaving Cert. And, listen, I went from playing football as something that you love to do, and it was a hobby, and you did it because it was an interest to you, to straight into being your job. And obviously it took a while for that to register to me that it was actually my job, and it wasn't just a mess about with your mates. And the good thing about it was, I left a small town in Trim to go to just in the outskirts of London, which is a massively populated area. And the good thing for me was it was about 10, 12, maybe 14 other Irish lads at the club at the time, which was a good thing, but possibly also a bad thing, because you probably weren't as professional and you had a bit more distractions than you possibly would have if you had been in a place with less lads in the same situation as yourself.
Yeah, and then your time in Scotland, just having a look over the weekend on different games you played and, you know, big matches you played against the likes of Celtic and Rangers and some big goals and lots of injuries too, unfortunately, too, and stuff like that. So you had an interesting 7 years there.
Yeah. After leaving Millwall, I went non-league for two seasons. I played for Fisher Athletic, which it was really good, actually. Yeah, we had quite a decent team, a lot of ex-league players in it, and a lot of players that left Fisher then to go on and play league football in England. So it was really good. It was a really good learning experience for me, and it went from the academy and reserve team football, where it was all about performance levels and how you did in the personal level, to actually 3 o'clock on a Saturday, where it meant something. The results meant more than performance and everything else. So plus the physicality of the non-league game prepared me for when I did get an opportunity to go to Scotland. And when I got to Kilmarnock then, obviously the step up was huge, but it was good to get back into full-time football and be given that opportunity. And working under Jim Jeffries and Billy Brown at Kilmarnock was very good. Obviously, I went into Kilmarnock going from non-league, and Stephen Naismith was sort of the star man there. And he was just back from training with Arsenal for a few weeks when Arsenal was back in 2007, I think it was. And they were like one of the best teams in Europe at the time. So that's the level of player you were going to train with. And obviously, it was very good to be exposed to that and to develop and kick on from there.
And at that time, you know, Celtic and Rangers, as they are now, were competing at the top all the time. What was it like being a centre-back or a full-back in those days against those great Celtic and Rangers teams? I'm sure, you know, if we list off the number of top strikers Celtic had across that period, I'm sure you had some interesting days at work.
Yeah, listen, it's similar. It's similar to the way the League of Ireland Premier Division is now in regards to Dundalk, and probably Shamrock Rovers are the two that are, I think, a bit ahead of the rest. And a lot of times, the games you play against Celtic and Rangers, particularly Celtic at Celtic Park, it's probably the games you get the most time on the ball. They want teams to be expansive and commit players forward, so when they turn the ball over, then they can counter-attack and obviously be effective in that regards where the space is. But yeah, listen, I went from then playing a couple of hundred people in non-league football, and I think my first game, funnily enough, was against Gretna in Fir Park. So Gretna obviously were down near the border, and we're playing in Fir Park, which was miles away, 2 hours away from where they were, so they had very little crowds. But I can remember then I went and started at Ibrox, playing left back at the start of December, I think it was, and it was a full house. And I remember thinking to myself, like, what this is like. It was proper football, and I know people say it might exaggerate, but it was literally was you were shouting at a player 10 yards away, and they couldn't hear you, or you couldn't hear them because of the size of the crowd. And I remember thinking to myself, that's where you want to be playing every week. And obviously for some of my ability, I was never going to go and play in the Premier League in England or a top club in anywhere else. So the balance of things in the Scottish Premier League, where you have two gigantic clubs in Celtic and Rangers, gave me that opportunity to play in front of crowds like that.
Interesting you said that about Celtic and having time on the ball, because I had Jamie McGrath on the podcast last week, and one of his early games for St Mirren this season they were bashed 5 or 6 nil by Celtic at Celtic Park, but he said he actually felt very comfortable in possession because, as you said, Celtic, and actually at the coaching conference we were at in November or December time, Damien Duff gave a presentation of similar ideas about letting you have the ball and then trying to absolutely kill you on the counter-attack.
Yeah, that's, listen, it's obviously, it's naturally going to happen. I'd say 90% of the teams that play against Dundalk or play against Shamrock Rovers or Celtic Rangers, the big teams in each league, they'll just compact the game, they'll make it narrow, they'll sit deep and make sure there's very little space in between the lines of across the pitch, and they just defend for their life. So it's very, very hard to break that down. I'm sure you know yourself, James, if you set up sessions in training where it's wave of attacks against the defence and you can overload it, maybe a back four and even three midfielders against 11 players, and it's very, very hard to break them down. So they encourage you and give you a false sense of security that you're doing really well, and you commit players forward, and then because of the players they have and the ability they have, that as soon as you turn it over, then you're conceding goals, and you always feel, oh, we're in that game and we're after losing 3-0, as you said. Like, so yeah, it's the reality, but it's also good the way different managers have played under a lot of managers, and one of the managers, Mixie Patalainen, was regiment in the way he did shape, and every player that went on the pitch knew exactly what they were doing. And we happened to have two of the best players, footballing wise, in Kilmarnock's team that time, in Mehdi Taoul and Alexei Yaremenko. And he played a Christmas tree formation, Mixu, and they played as two number 10s, and he had Conor Salmon up front, who athletically was unbelievable. So against, funnily enough, against Celtic and Rangers and them teams, we sort of sat back in and we ripped the counter against them.
Yeah, and I want to speak later on about the managers you played under and what maybe you learned from them to help shape you as the manager now. But just on your League of Ireland playing career team, you came back to Shamrock Rovers in 2015. You would have been around 30 at that stage alone, and then a short spell permanently at Sligo, and then you finished up at Bray Wanderers. So you had a short stint towards the end of your career before you became a manager in the greatest league in the world. How did you find it on the transition from, you know, 7 years in Scotland back to playing at home?
Yeah, I always wanted to come back and play in the League of Ireland. I used to go up and watch Shells on a Friday night with my dad many years ago. Like, we used to go up every Friday night, especially when he played for Belva for four years or so as a kid through the teenage years. I remember, like, the likes of Desi Baker was playing, and Stephen Gagan and many more. Like, good players, and it was exciting football. I used to get a buzz about it. And so we always used to want to play in the League of Ireland. And listen, it was lucky enough that I was able to go over and stick it out in the UK for a few years. And coming back then, my family had moved home at that stage. I know you listen to a few players talking about the way it is and the life of professional football. Everybody thinks it's the Premier League players in England that are on 30, 40, 50, maybe more, 100, 200 grand a week. But the majority of players that play professional football live paycheck to paycheck. And when I was in the UK, in Scotland particularly, I had four different primary schools. One of my eldest daughter had, and the other one then had a nursery in three different primary schools. So I got to the stage where I was 30 years of age. I just left Hibs, and or just before, I was 29, just coming up to be 30, but I left Hibs in the January, and my wife decided then wherever we were moving next was where we were going to base ourselves for the future, because the kids have to make friends, like school, childhood friends that they're going to have for the rest of their life, and that was more important than bouncing around club to club. So that opportunity came, and she moved back home, and then I'd done a short stint at St Johnston. Again, the way the end of my career went professionally was I snapped my Achilles tendon with a day left. I was out of contract, so I ended up coming home then, and I didn't have a club then for about 10 months or so, and then I signed with Shamrock Rovers, and again, it was Pat Fenlon that I had it. Hibs brought me in. I was grateful for that, but listen, I was nowhere near fitness levels or anywhere that I should have been to play for Shamrock Rovers, and that was evident, and I ended up going out to Sligo, getting games under my belt, and finished off at Braden.
So across all of that time, how focused were you on doing your coaching badges and picking up small bits from maybe those managers who you played under? Because very shortly after you finished with Bray, you became a manager yourself. So I'm sure in your head, you didn't just jump into that. You were thinking, I'm sure, that that's something you did want to pursue eventually.
Yeah, listen, I think I did the fitness instructor course and was looking at other things, and it wasn't something I was really interested in. So I was looking at my coaching badges, and I was actually booked on to go on to the B license. I think it was with the FEI because I was coming home to do it because the wife was already at home. So, and I snapped my Achilles. So it was supposed to start in May, and I didn't end up starting then until September. There was a second course, so I was deferred a little bit. went on to the one in September and I completed my B license then. I went back to Scotland then to do my A license. It's something that I was looking towards, and it was what I wanted to get involved in. I always wanted to be a manager as well. I didn't really want to be a coach, but I thought that it would have been good for me to get experience coaching underneath a manager and learning. And it didn't turn out that way, and I was offered to drop the job when I was still playing at Bray. Like, I was only just finishing, and that sort of prompted me retirement from playing. And I got to the stage end of my career where I was just sore all the time. I wasn't fit. I was just getting through games. And I think it was the right time then to, I think, you know yourself, you feel it in your own body, that's time to stop playing. And listen, I was grateful to get the opportunity to draw it. And I'm lucky to still be in the job now, 2.5 years later.
Yeah, so bring me to that time, October, November 2017. You're just finishing with Bray. And early December, you're named the manager of Drogheda. How was the timeline when the phone first rang? And I think when the news came out, you know, people were a little bit surprised because you literally just finished. But I'm sure you were very excited to take the job.
Yeah, I think, listen, there's only 20 jobs in the country, manager's jobs. So you can't, in the semi-professional, professional level. So you can't, I don't think you can turn it down. Was I ready for it? Obviously not, because I had no experience at that level. And I didn't know the First Division too well at the time. And so I remember sitting in the sitting room, and it's the motivation to go out and do runs in the middle of winter. And I found that difficult when I came back home, because obviously pre-season for the last 13 years previously was in the summer, and you knew you finished in May, April or May, you do your couple of weeks off and you get back into it, and then you're training during the morning for the majority of my career. And to then motivate myself to go out and do runs and everything else when it was freezing cold in the middle of December, it was difficult. And obviously, I had a lot of injuries, and that took its toll on me. So when I got a phone call to say they'd be interested in talking to Drogheda, they were looking for a young manager, and they'd just been relegated. And I think Pete had stepped aside, and they wanted to maybe go down a different route in regards to someone very young. And when I heard that, I went and spoke to the club on a couple of occasions, and they obviously were impressed with what I said. And I really was looking forward to seeing what we could do there. And it's just happened to snowball from there.
How did you flip so quickly from the mentality of a player to the mentality of a manager?
I think probably the latter part of my career, from maybe going to Hibs onwards, I would always like sort of consciously go on my way to try and help younger players and give advice and speak to them. And it is a dog-eat-dog world in football, and it's a very selfish industry, and a ruthless one as well. As I found out myself at St. Johnstone that I snapped my Achilles. It was 2 days before the Scottish Cup final. It was the last training session we were having before they travelled to the final, and I never had any contact with the manager. He never asked me how it was. I snapped my Achilles 20 yards from him on the pitch, and he never came over to me. I was stretchered off, was brought into the physio room, which was next door to his office. I lay in the bed for an hour and a half. I knew then my career was over, because I knew the severity of a ruptured Achilles. Obviously, he's quite emotional. You're changing, that's it, my career's over, blah, blah, blah. Never come into the physio room to see me. As I lay there for an hour and a half, I was brought up to reception. I had to get a taxi back to my apartment. No one gave me a lift or anything. He happened to see me when he was walking out. He says, "Oh, I'll give you a ring." So at this stage, my wife and my kids were back home, and I was living in an apartment by myself. And I got a phone call that evening. He told me, "Don't bother coming to the final. It'd be too much for me." So obviously I rang my wife then, and she booked a flight over with the kids straight away, and came, I think it was that night she actually came over. So I wasn't sitting there by myself, and I ended up sitting in the apartment watching the Scottish Cup final then, and obviously they beat Dundee United 2-0. So you're delighted for the players that you've seen have worked very hard, but you're sort of sitting thinking that's the other side of things as well. And since that day, I've never had any contact from anyone at the club to see how it was. They offered me training facilities to come in and do me rehab, but obviously, listen, there was no wage or there was no accommodation, so it wasn't doable for me. But that's just the nature of it. So you remember things like that as well, and you try then now as a manager when you know players are injured and whatnot, that I know how it wasn't hurtful or anything. I was well aware of experience at that stage to know what football was about, and so I'm conscious to look after the players. We did a piece a couple of years ago, Jamie, on mental health, and you can see how it affects players when This is all the world. Like, it's football is a strange industry. You live in a bubble. You think you're important. You get this false sense of, I don't know, elevated stature of yourself. And when you're removed from that, it's it's like the bubble bursts and all of a sudden then people, like, you're forgotten about. You could be a club legend and next minute then you're nothing. And if you're not mentally prepared for that, it can be very, very difficult. And I think the statistics within football to show that the amount of players that have trouble after they finish playing, it's huge. And that's sort of, as a manager now, I'm conscious of that, and I'm trying to encourage players to go to college, which is the main thing, especially at the level that we're at, where it's not a career. It's more or less a stepping stone to try and go on and have a career. And the majority of players that play won't have that career. So it's important to have that degree behind them and have backup plans for when they're finished. It's a short career.
Yeah, that charity was called Suicide or Survive. Yeah. Myself and Tim and Graham Kelly and Kieran Marty Waters and loads of other players did. Well, they tried to do an altitude chamber heated cycle. I dropped out shortly afterwards because I wasn't a sports person like Tim who finished it. But yeah, that was great. And I remember we were sitting actually on a boxing ring, both dripping sweat, talking about that. And now a couple of years later, you're saying that, you know, even thinking about that and your own experiences help shape how you treat your players, which is something that I've heard about you, is that the players do understand that you do have their best interests at heart and you're not just treating them as pieces of meat.
No, listen, I'm not nothing out. I'm not getting nothing out of it. Like, I'm getting a lot out as well. Like, I've got ambitions to be as successful as I can as a manager and maybe get into a full-time role in this country and try and emulate the likes of Stephen Kenny, who's the benchmark. That's where the bar is. It's up there. So you look at that and you want to get there yourself, and you know that you need the players to get there. But I'm also off the other side of things where I'm not long finished playing myself. And I had a lot of injuries. I think I had about seven or eight operations in my last, what, 2.5, 3 years, 3 years maybe in Scotland. So I spent time after time, day after day, sitting in a physio room looking out a window of players training. I know how difficult it is, and so I'm sort of conscious of that the players aren't just there to get your results and whatever else, that they're individuals and they've got their own path in life to follow. And if that means that you allow lads to go and do exams in college instead of training, you give them time off, they might miss games, so be it. In the long term, no one will remember who doesn't play against Cove away or Longford at home, but that player will remember in a couple of years down the line that during an important time in my exams in college where I was stressed out, that a manager gave me a couple of weeks off, and that was more important to him than actually getting the team on a Friday night. So I think in the long term, you get paid back double what you put out. Like, so that's important for me.
Yeah, and you've had two full seasons and a start of this season, made the playoffs in both occasions. Ranchel's very close last year. What do you love about being a League of Ireland manager?
I think the best part of it and probably the worst part of it is the Friday night, the game. It is like you prepare, you do the best you can during the week and recruitment, and you watch the opposition and you watch other games maybe in the Premier Division and you see who's not playing and or other people moving about, and you're picking players throughout the season that you don't just look at the best players in the opposition teams, but the ones that would fit into your team maybe the best. And you're trying then at the end of the season to go and speak to people and try and get them in, and you think it'll make a difference, and you prepare for games, and then on a Friday night then there's nothing more satisfying than when you've worked hard for a number of weeks, if not months, to create something that you want your team to play, and players buy into it and they believe in what you're doing, and when it clicks on a Friday night then and you get a goal out of it or you win a game because of something you've worked on, it's extremely satisfying. And the togetherness as well that we have as a group at Drogheda, it's really, really good. And you've a lot of experienced players. You've Dell and you've Sean Brennan and a couple of others. And them, the way they treat the young lads, it's the most favourable thing that I've seen. And it's the most enjoyable thing I've played. When I came back at the League of Ireland, I felt there was a little bit of a few clubs that I was in it that players wanted to, they'd stand over someone just to get an extra game out of it when they were coming to the end of their careers. And I'll not mention names, but I played at a club where a couple of the older players were absolutely poisonous towards the young lads. One fella in particular, a young lad, was doing well in training, and he went past him. He said, "You go past me again, and I'll break your leg." And I just thought, mate, if you're going to have to start doing that and backstabbing players to try and get a game, just hang your boots up. Like, it's time to call it a day. And that's what I wanted to create in Drogheda, was we wanted to encourage and bring young players through and get them into the team. And even if it's at the expense of an experienced player, you still see them trying to help them in training. And even though the direct competition of their place, and that's pleasing.
What do you not like? What do you find as the biggest challenge as a League of Ireland manager?
There's nothing I don't like. If I've been given an opportunity, I'm very grateful. I'm not sitting there thinking, oh, I want to change this. Listen, you try and implement as much changes as you can. But it's understanding that clubs are working within a restricted budget and resources, and that's fine. That's the challenge, and that's where you become better, maybe manager or delegating jobs and getting the most out of other things. So it's all a learning curve. If I am lucky enough to go on and do better in my career, it'll be based on exactly what I'm doing here at Drogheda and the experience I'm gaining. I've made a hell of a lot of mistakes, but I'm in a position where I've got a squad of players, I've got staff, and I've got also got a board that believe that what we're doing is the right thing, and there's no pressure there from them intrinsically, and it's something that I'm very, very grateful for, and I'm in a position that I'm able to maybe go 2, 3, 4 results, poor results, and there's no pressure there, and then we can bounce back and get things right in the long term. I think if you look at Shamrock Rovers, Stephen Bradley got a lot of stick maybe 3, 4 years ago when he said there was a 5-year plan, and at the start it wasn't going as well as they probably wanted it to be there, and they were losing a lot of derby games against Bowes, and maybe in previous seasons the board would have pulled the trigger and possibly changed manager. But you see the benefits of it now that they've stuck with Stephen, and that gap has closed from Dundalk, and at the minute they're probably the one now that are pushing the pace, and Dundalk are the ones that are going to have to probably stick it out with Shamrock Rovers rather than do the way around the last few years. And that's obviously the belief that Shamrock Rovers board had in Stephen, and it's obviously paying dividend now.
Tim, talk to me about the kind of role of manager and coaching on the training pitch. And, you know, some head coaches are called a head coach, others are called a manager, and you have Kevin Doherty as the assistant manager. He's managing the league before. He's on the same new 2-year contract as you, and you both signed that maybe in September to bring it to the end of 2021. So how do you split that and man management to coaching to actually physically taking training sessions or standing back and stuff?
Yeah, listen, me and Kev speak every day, a number of times a day. I'm sure every manager will say the same with their assistant. They're constantly on the phone, and you're talking numbers, what we're doing in training, who you're playing against, what type of training you want to do, if you're tweaking at and within regards to systems that the opposition play, or how you think you might be able to set up that will be the most beneficial on the Friday night. And you'll design sessions based on that. Kev takes the majority of all the sessions. What I've noticed as well playing under certain managers is when the manager's the manager, he's the coach, he's organising training, he's taking shooting, he's doing this, that and the other. I think it's too much. It's the same voice all the time, and I think get mundane and players can sort of get fed up with it. So it sort of was from the start, I wanted to be a manager that when I came in and spoke and that I wanted the players to be engaged, I didn't want them to be disinterested because it's constantly my voice all the time. And that's why I was lucky enough to get Kev in. And he's a brilliant coach, so Kev does a lot of sessions, but I will bounce in certain things in sessions, and I'll take it and I'll do whatever I want to get across, the point I want to get across. And then I think later in the week when we do a lot of the tactical stuff, we are directly wanting stuff from players on the Friday night that I take all that sort of stuff. So there's no black and white. So if it comes on a Friday night at half time and I'm giving information and telling the player you're not doing what I wanted, there's no lost ground where he'll say, well, what Kev was doing during the week was this, that, or the other. So it's clear roles, and it seems to be working quite well for us.
And Tim, what type of things would be sticking in the back of your head from all those managers you played under that maybe stuff that you liked and also stuff that maybe you didn't like that have helped form you in a certain way, apart from your own ideals and your own philosophies and stuff?
Mixu Patalainen was excellent in regards to the amount of work he did in regards to how his team were set up and how they played and definitive roles, where everyone got to a stage where when we were out of possession, that as soon as the ball broke down, everybody knew exactly where it was going. Because he threw number 10s in, it was into certain areas. Even if you were clearing the ball, if you couldn't see where it was a corner came in, if you were at the front post, hit it in a certain area of the pitch, and 9 out of 10 times that player would have been there. So that was really, really clear information. And obviously they had a very good season that year, Kilmarnock. So and Mixu ended up getting the Finnish national job off the back of that, so the 6 months that he was there. So that stuck out in regards to preparation for games. And Stuart McCall at Motherwell was a brilliant manager. Very rarely raised his voice. When you think of the career he had, like Scottish international, Rangers, Bradford, Sheffield United manager, a lot of experience. Very, very rarely raise his voice or have a pop. If we lost the game again, it was a very good season we had. We finished third in the league that year, so I think we won 19 games out of 38, and only lost maybe four games outside the Old Firm in that season. So it was a remarkable season. And if we did lose a game, he'd have his little words after the game, and then before we left the changing room, he goes, right, that's gone, it's dealt with, it's forgotten about, let's go again on Monday. And on Monday then, his demeanour would be exactly the same as it was the week before after winning the game. So that's one thing I've took from him. And obviously at Hibs, I worked under Pat Fenlon, and again at Shamrock Rovers as well. And I think Pat's honesty in the way he is, just up front, there's no back doors with him. That's not necessarily in regards to he'll tell you this, like he's negative or he'll let you know. He's, very rarely you'd have an argument with Pat. It's just information he'd give you. And to this day, he's one of the first people that if I had any doubts or wanted any advice on that, and I'd pick the phone up and I'd ring Pat now. And after Pat left, then Terry Butcher came in, and I learned a lot from him in regards to how not to do things. I thought he was absolutely woeful. The way he treated the experienced players at the club, the way he was, there was information he was giving players in the dressing room. He wanted to be very direct and turn the ball over and just put it in behind and play the channels and work hard as the centre forward, chase things down. And then the reputation Hibs have are playing a very expansive football and getting it down and passing. They always have been like that, and the fans love that. And the first thing was at half time, he was giving that information, I can remember. And remember Alan Mabry got the ball, a very experienced player, done exactly what he was told, put it in behind, and Terry Butcher went out on the sideline waving his hands, screaming, pass it, and I thought, I don't like that. He was playing up to the crowd that he wanted to pass, and he's putting a lot of blame onto the players, so I learned that massively, that he froze all the experienced players out. James McPake was the captain, myself, Rowan Vine, Kevin Thompson, he froze out a lot of the experienced players. And I think we went from fifth in the league with Pat, and they ended up getting relegated that year. I left in the January. And at the end of the season, then he needed the experienced players. And I think even the quote that his assistant manager said was, we shit on the experienced players, and then they shit on us when we needed them at the end of the season. So I learned that at the start of the season, or start when you do it, don't get on the wrong side of the players. You need them more than they need you, because if I have a bad time at Drogheda, there is no second job. I said, if a player has a bad time at Drogheda, there's another 19 teams in the country you can go and play for. So that's the major thing I took out from that.
Tim, a last couple of questions, because you've been very good with your time and I know you've got the kids and stuff to look after. Your behaviour and the manager's behaviour and how they move about and what they say and their mannerisms on the sideline. You spoke there about Terry Butcher and waving his hands and the players looking over and stuff. And I know that's something that you've learned over the years since you started, because you can't be as emotional maybe as a manager as you would be as a player. How have you found that, and how you behave translating to them on the pitch?
Yeah, it's something that I want to, I have to improve on it. I've had a 4-game ban and a 3-game ban last year. So it's hard. I think, listen, it's a difficult job for any referee and linesman, the fourth official, because you've constantly two managers, the same decision, and both managers are always disagreeing over the decision, and they're, if it's not me in his ear, it's someone else, and it can be very difficult for them. And obviously, listen, they can't see everything. We make mistakes as managers, players make mistakes, so officials are going to make mistakes as well. But I think they have to understand as well that this is our profession, and this is the career path that I want to go down. So if things are going against, especially in big games, that could make a massive difference throughout the season, you're going to get emotional, and you might go overboard a little bit. And I think there has to be sort of an understanding from where we are as well. And that's not just black and white. And it's like anything, Jamie, if the way you speak to people, if you speak to them the right manner, they'll treat you well. If they speak to you in the right manner, you'll end up treating them well as well. So, but no, it is. It's again, it's if players got sent off for doing what I did in the sideline, I have a massive pop to player. So I've got a proper rein myself in, I suppose, and set a better example for my players, that if my behaviour on the sidelines a lot better, that I expect more from them on the pitch as well. So,
but at the same time, you don't want to be sitting there like Louis van Gaal with your clipboard and your notepad and not saying a word. And I wasn't really asking about the referees. I was more about, you know, the information you give, or if a player plays a bad pass or misses a chance or does something brilliant, that they know that you're going to be with them, as opposed to having a go at them, particularly with some of your younger players. A good example of that is someone like Luke McNally last season, or Conor Kane, who's been with you for a couple of years as a young player, and they probably know, you've had young keepers in as well, that they can go and try things and you're not going to absolutely cane them if they make a mistake.
No, listen, players are going to make mistakes, especially, that's the nature of the league is as well, that we're going to have a lot of young players in our team, and they're going to make mistakes. It's giving them the information then to try and correct it, and going forward, if they're continually making the same mistake, then I've got to look at myself and going, well, what am I not? How am I not getting the message across that a player is making the same mistake all the time? And if then they make a mistake, and you can see it's a regular thing, and then they improve on it and it becomes less and less and less, well, then you know you're doing the right things, and the player's also doing the right things. So, listen, I've had a pop after a couple of games of players making mistakes, and I've gone over the top, and I've been too harsh, and I've always then on the Monday in front of the group apologised on behalf of myself, the way I spoke or the manner in which I've said it. And I think the players respect that as well, that listen, I'm going to make mistakes, they're going to make mistakes, but as you said there, once the intentions of what we're doing as a group is the right thing to do, well then that's fine, we'll go forward from there.
And you've spoken about the 20 jobs in the country, Tim, and I would say probably what, 7 or 8 of those 20 are probably full-time jobs for the managers, that they don't have to have another job, and they don't have to, in their case, work nights, or in other people's cases, work from 8 till 4 and then go and train in 3 nights a week and then go to a match away to Cove or something. So how do you find that balance between your football job and then your, I don't want to say actual job, because football is an actual job, but you know, you have to have 2 jobs at the moment?
Yeah, it is. That's the way it is. It's listen, I'm a husband and I'm a father of 4, so I've got my priorities aren't Drogheda or my other job. My priority at the minute is my family and my kids. So that means that I'm in a position where I'm lucky to be in a job in the country that I want to develop and improve and try and get to the Premier Division. And if that was the case, then maybe things would change in regards to how the setup is at Drogheda. But it is, there's a balancing act. That's probably the bit I was touching about earlier, but you live in a bubble and people think there's just no life outside of football. But as soon as you're removed from that, and it's a big shock to you that, listen, you get on with it. You just go, and I'm working in Musgrave's over in Kilcock at the minute, so I'm really enjoying it in there as well. And it's a good thing as well, because football can be 24/7, especially as a manager, and maybe for the couple of hours that I'm over there every night, it's a little bit of a release from constantly thinking about games and formations and players and whatever else, training sessions. So I can see it as a good thing, but listen, further down the line, obviously I want to get into full-time football, and that's my aim. And at the minute then, just keeping the balance between the work not affecting me preparation for games or training, and the quality that we produce for the players is the priority for myself and Kev.
Yeah, because I wanted to finish on that, and you've mentioned the Premier Division for Drogheda a couple of times. There's also a piece on the 42.ie recently enough talking about your ambition is to go back to Scotland or England to manage there in what is a full-time football industry. And as we said, there's probably only 7 or 8 jobs here that's possible to do. So you're 35 now, and your ambition is to continue to try and use your career and use your time at Drogheda to continue to learn and progress.
Listen, if I ended up, the goal for us this season is try and get promoted. The first year that we were here, we sort of didn't know where we were at in regards to the squad. And as I said, I didn't know the league, and we came close. Got to the playoff semi-final, got beaten by Finn Harps. Up there, we drew the first leg 1-1, went up there and we lost 2-0. And then last season, we got more points, we accumulated more points, we ran shells a little bit closer, and we progressed an extra round through the playoffs, and we got to the final of the playoff and lost in the second half of extra time in the second leg. So
on again, the worst pitch ever.
Listen, it's the same pitch for both teams though, so you can't hold that up against anything. It's that's the other problem you have. It's November, start of November in Donegal. It's not going to be like Marbella, so you got to sort of half expect that. We improved on that, and then this year the goal again is to improve and try and go one step further. We got to the second last game of the season against Shells, so if we can go one step further and possibly try and win the league, or if it is the playoffs, try and go one step further in the playoff. And the priority for us is to try and get promoted, and then if we are promoted, we're in a position that we're in the top league in the country, which is the top 10 teams, and that's somewhere then I'd try and improve and try and develop and go on. And you never know the situation. It could be a situation that Drogheda could end up getting financial situation to help, or from a local businessman, or you know, you just never know. And I could stay at Drogheda for a long time and be successful in the League of Ireland, and that'd be pleasing as well.
Yeah, and plans as well for a new Astro in United Park, which is a club we're investigating, which is a great thing too. And yes, if the playoffs are on this year, Tim, and you're in them, they'll be in like December, so the pitches definitely won't be like Marbella. So you got to get your team ready for that.
That's it. You got to try and, if you can, try and win the league and go up directly. But if not, if you're in the playoffs, so be it. You've got to go and play in whatever pitches they are. It's I've sort of thought about it in regards to the playoff final being over one leg, a one game, one off game, maybe in a neutral venue. And I know that the ladies, the women's FAI Cup final's on before the men's one. I don't know if you could do three games in one pitch. Possibly it would be a bit too much, but I'm sure if the First Division playoff final was on before the men's or on the same day, that you'd probably add another 5, 8, maybe 10,000 people on the gate. So that'd be a pretty interesting situation, because you're playing a one-off game. It's a unique situation for both teams then, and it'd probably give the First Division club a better chance of going off, because they're up against a better opposition. But if not, you're going to have to be in the same structure as this year, and we know that's over two legs. And if we're lucky enough to get to the final again, we'll be prepared better than we were last year.
Great idea. Tim, thanks a million for your time. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you back on a League of Ireland sideline hopefully soon. Thanks a million.
No bother, Jay. Thanks.
Great stuff there, and thanks a million to Patrick Hooban and Tim Clancy for their time. If you're listening to that podcast, you can watch it, both of them done on Skype video on YouTube. Just search League of Ireland Lives. And if you want to give us a like or a rating or a review, that'd be great as well. I'm also on Twitter at Jamie Moore Sport and Instagram at Jamie_Moore1. And enjoy the rest of the week, folks. Stay safe, and we'll hopefully have football back quite soon. Speak to you soon, folks. Bye-bye.